It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. This week we spoke with Kurt Volker. He was a NATO ambassador in 2008 and 2009, then served as special representative for Ukraine negotiations from 2017 to 2019. He said Putin has made himself and his country a pariah and that Russia's already lost. But Volker is of the mind that we could have done more ahead of this, that despite decisions not to put boots on the ground in Ukraine, there was still so much more that could have been done that may have served as a deterrent. We also talked about Europe, how U.S. engagement in Europe will shift due to this war, and how NATO may grow, as well as what Russia's war, Ukraine's reaction, and the world's reaction means for China's leader and any future efforts to invade Taiwan. We often have to cut interviews down for time during the week, but we thought you might like to hear this full interview. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the Weekday Rundown podcast if you haven't already. Now, here's Kurt Volker on the Fox News Rundown Extra.
Let's just start with some of your broad thoughts off the top. I know this is a very sort of broad question to really start with, but I'm sure you've been thinking probably about it a lot. You know, what do Vladimir Putin's actions mean for the world? Because it does feel like we're now being presented with a sort of scenario, and maybe we're the ones presenting it, or maybe Russia is, that's the question, but where... So you're with them. It feels very bilateral, for lack of a better word.
I think it can appear rather binary in the sense that Putin has gone all out and made himself an international pariah. He has launched an unprovoked aggression against a sovereign neighboring state. He has engaged in indiscriminate attacks against civilians and population centers. He has killed tens of thousands of people. He has launched 10 million people out of their homes, 3 to 4 million of them in neighboring countries, 6 million or so displaced within Ukraine. And then these atrocities that we've seen as well, you know, execution style killings of civilians in places where the Russians had gone in. So he has gone all out in making himself and making Russia a global pariah. This has rallied the world around Ukraine and its cause. Ukraine is a sovereign state. It's people who are striving to build a modern country. They are suffering unspeakable brutality, and so everyone is trying to help them. So yes, in that sense, it has become a little black and white in a moral sense. The second thing I would say about this, though, is that already I think we can say that Russia has lost and that Ukraine ultimately will win. And the question now is how this all plays out. Russia cannot take over Ukraine. It cannot take Ukrainian territory and hold it. The Ukrainians have put up fierce resistance. They stopped the attacks on Kharkiv, on Sumy, on Chernihiv, on Kyiv. They have retaken territory that the Russians tried to take early in the war. They have killed thousands of Russian soldiers and taken out lots of military equipment. Estimates are as much as a third of Russia's combat capability has been destroyed now in this war. And then on top of this, you have the economic sanctions that the U.S. and the EU have imposed. So Russia is now effectively driving itself into the ground as a result of this war. Ukraine has turned the tide back in their own favor. And we are seeing, even with the NATO meeting today, Secretary of State Blinken's time there, the rest of the world is really stepping up to help Ukraine.
You just said that Vladimir Putin has made Russia and himself a pariah, that Russia has lost. We've heard that before. But when Russia was suspended from the Human Rights Council Thursday, there were still 24 votes against the suspension and 58 abstentions. So Russia is not without its supporters, and those abstentions are certainly, you know, noteworthy. Countries like Brazil and India. Do Russian friends or those abstainers matter, and how much?
I don't think it matters a lot, to be honest. First off, I think we have to look at dependencies. Many countries have gotten themselves into a position of dependence on Russia, Germany, of course, recently, and now they're struggling to get out of that and struggling to figure out how to shut off Russian gas, and still not with a plan to do so. India, likewise, they got off Iranian oil and gas, and now they're addicted to Russian oil and gas. Very hard for them to do so with a population of 1.4 billion. But that doesn't mean that India is siding with Russia in the war. They just want to stay out of it. And I think what we have to look at this through a couple of lenses at the same time. As we just said, there is kind of a black and white, right and wrong moral case here. Russia being an aggressor, Russia killing civilians. Nobody's attacking Russia. No one's killing Russian civilians. Russia is engaged in this incredible brutality and unprovoked aggression against Ukraine, killing Ukrainian civilians, attacking the cities, creating these refugee flows, destroying the infrastructure. No one is attacking Russia. No one is killing Russian civilians. And that makes this a very clear moral case. That's on the one side. On the other side, though, countries are looking at, how does this end? What happens afterwards? How do we manage our own interests? And the West, which is involved in this deeply, Ukraine is a European country, and they are supporting Ukraine's right to sovereignty, independence, and protecting itself. But, you know, if you're in Africa, or if you're in India, or if you're in, you know, South America, you're looking at this as very far away, very unfortunate. We sympathize with Ukrainians, but, you know, we don't really want to get dragged into this, you know, black and white choice. What do? We just want to stay out of it. So again, that doesn't mean sympathy with Russia. That just means these countries are calculating their own interest and staying quiet.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
As you noted, Secretary of State Blinken said there's a growing coalition of countries with Ukraine and against Russia. We know Finland, even Sweden, are expressing more support for joining NATO themselves, although Sweden, apparently based on polling, isn't over that 50% mark. What might happen with NATO and Europe? What might things look like in a year, maybe 5 years, especially if our military leadership is right and this war could last for years?
Yeah. So unfortunately, our military leadership has been wrong at most points in this crisis, calculating that Russia would roll over Kiev within 3 days, that the Ukrainians would not mount an effective defense, that they can't integrate Western arms. All of this wrong. And I think they're wrong on the length of the war as well. This is not going to be years. What we're looking at is weeks to months, where Russia has had a significant blow to its armed forces. It is struggling to regroup. It is bringing in conscripts. It is bringing in reservists who haven't trained with the units that they're going to. It is taking World War II era equipment out of storage, which has a lot of operational problems. They have scaled back their objectives from trying to eliminate Ukraine to simply trying to eliminate free Russians who live in Ukraine and taking over the areas of eastern Ukraine. That may not even go so well. And the more help we can give to Ukraine right now, when they have momentum, the more this will disrupt Russia's ability to regroup and retake territory. Ultimately, I don't believe that Russia can withstand a military defeat and an economic collapse at the same time. Something will give in Russia. It may take weeks, it may take months, maybe it'll go longer than that. But the outlines of this are clear. Russia emerges from this weakened economically, politically, and militarily. Whether or not Vladimir Putin stays in power, that will be the case. Ukraine survives as a sovereign and independent European state. And the West is now clearly on Ukraine's side, talking about EU membership, providing massive reconstruction funds to rebuild the country, trying to figure out what the security guarantees are for Ukraine in the future. So this fundamentally transforms the map from what we were looking at just 3 months ago.
Yeah. Talk to me more broadly, though, about Europe and NATO, our alliances. I mean, we're talking now about permanent bases in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
That's been a subject of conversation over the past couple of weeks before House Armed Services Committee meetings. What do you envision? I mean, let's say this does only last, weeks or months. Would it still dramatically change how NATO functions, how Europe functions.
Yes, I think so. So let's just go through it systematically then. So let's look at NATO. NATO has done a good job in affirming the Article 5 security guarantee for all members and backing that up with deployment of forces to Central and East European member states to demonstrate to Russia that if there is an attack on any of them, there will be a military response. That's very good. I think we have to be pleased with how NATO has handled this. A lot of unity, a lot of coming together. Second, you now have the effect, as you indicated, of traditionally neutral countries like Finland and Sweden saying, we don't want to be alone anymore. Let's join NATO. They're not 100% there yet, but the train is leaving the station. The Finns are really acting very quickly. I think the Swedes will catch up. And there's a moment in time with a NATO summit coming in June when they've got to get their applications in order for NATO to affirmatively say at the summit, yes, you are welcome. And then we have to do an accelerated ratification process. Then you have the European Union. The European Union, 3 months ago, I was in Brussels and everyone talked about Ukraine as a challenge. I was there last week and everyone talked about Ukraine as a European country that we have to help. So the mentality has shifted fundamentally in Ukraine's favor. They see Ukraine ultimately as a part of Europe. The European Council, if you have to get into the institutional mechanics here, unfortunately, the European Council is the group of all the member states. And those states said to the European Commission, which is the bureaucracy, give us your advice on Ukraine's candidacy for EU membership. The European Commission will now do an accelerated process of reviewing it and come back to the member states and say, thumbs up. We think that this is the right thing to do. There are a lot of things Ukraine has to do in terms of legislation and alignment with European regulations and standards that will take years. But the signal coming from the EU will be positive. Take energy. Germany in particular protected Russia's exports of oil and gas to Europe, creating an unhealthy dependency on Russian energy supplies. A dependency that is so big that it has inhibited support for Ukraine now that Russia's attacking Ukraine. This has started to change. I think you're going to see a EU-wide embargo on Russian oil imports within the next couple of weeks. And that's going to dry up about 70% or so of the 600 million a day or whatever it is that is going to Russia every single day. Then you're going to see movement to get off of Russian gas, but it's going to take a little bit longer. And this will have a devastating impact on Russia's balance sheet. So when you combine the economic sanctions, the energy cutoff, it's going to have a devastating effect on Russia. Then when you talk about the future of Ukraine, you're looking at a European country, an independent sovereign state, a future member of the EU, and gaining security guarantees from states in Europe, if not from NATO itself, and that's still to be determined. It changes the landscape completely. No more of this, well, we have to work with Russia. Russia is now left out as a pariah state until Putin is gone and until their forces are out of Ukraine.
Our military leadership said this week that Putin was undeterrable, that he could have only been deterred with, like, essentially boots on the ground. But that was a decision, obviously, that, you know, we decided against. So then this was never really going to be stopped, was it?
Yeah. So this is what in Washington we call a Washington Monument argument, where you can't ever cut the budget because then there would be no funds to maintain the Washington Monument. And it's like, well, we could maintain the Washington Monument and decide to not spend money on something else. And so this is that kind of argument where anything we did to deter Vladimir Putin would mean boots on the ground, U.S. military engagement, World War III, therefore you can't do it. And I don't buy that at all. I think there are many things that we could have done earlier and more decisively that would have indicated to Vladimir Putin that he would get into exactly the scenario that he's in now, that there would be decisive military support for Ukraine. There would be devastating sanctions. We could have done these things before he invaded. We could have applied sanctions based on his military buildup. We could have accelerated military assistance deliveries to Ukraine. We could have given him very clear and stern warnings that we will engage, we will support Ukraine, Ukraine will emerge as a sovereign and independent state. We didn't do any of those things. And I accept the judgment of our political leadership that we didn't want to have U.S. forces directly engage with Russian forces. But there are so many things below that threshold that we could have done that could have made a difference.
Finally, I know you're not an Asian expert, but there has been a lot of talk about China and Taiwan vis-a-vis Ukraine and what lessons can be applied, you know, from that as we prepare for Xi Jinping to actually go after Taiwan. I know Secretary Austin said this week we can't really compare Ukraine and Taiwan, but some members of Congress are expressing real concern. Like, do we need to arm Taiwan in a certain way? With Ukraine, we've been laser focused, you know, on giving defensive, not offensive weapons. But what could we do to deter China from Taiwan? And why wouldn't the results of invading Ukraine be a deterrent? Like, China doesn't want similar economic sanctions. China doesn't want to deal with similar punishments.
Right. The best thing we can do to deter China on engaging military against Taiwan is to make sure that Ukraine succeeds, Ukraine wins. Hmm. If Russia, a much bigger military power with nuclear weapons and with superior, you know, finances and intelligence and so forth, can attack a country like Ukraine, which is weaker than Taiwan, and Ukraine wins, what better signal is there to China that Taiwan's not going to be so easy? Don't think that you can do better here than the Russians did. And moreover, Taiwan will fight as well. The West will help Taiwan. We should make that clear, and we should take steps now to demonstrate that, as we could have done with Ukraine. China does not respect Russia's violence against Ukraine. This is an attack on a sovereign state, a UN member state, something that China does not support. It does not view Taiwan in a similar circumstance. Russia is destroying the target. Russia is destroying Ukraine. China would like to absorb a rich Taiwan. And China is now able to observe. Ukraine can fight back. The West is helping Ukraine. We will help Ukraine to the point that it does win. And yes, Ukraine is being destroyed, but at the end of that, there will be a massive support to rebuild Ukraine. None of this is what China wants to see if it's thinking about an easy win in Taiwan.
Kurt Volker, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for the time.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.